Hello, it is May 24th, 2017. You're looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 6044 of the Will H. Experience podcast on Sports North. I am the aforementioned Will H. And thank you for spending part of your day with me. Allison is back. I was sick last week, so we didn't do a show, but we're back now with Allison. How's it going, Allison?
It's all good. I'm glad that you're feeling better, and it's a beautiful, beautiful day here in Houston, Texas.
I've infected my entire family with whatever, with my still somewhat undiagnosed, unconfirmed illness that wiped me out all of last week. I think my entire family has it, so I am in a dark room with the door shut and locked, not for my own safety. Well, I guess for my own safety, not because I know I'm afraid of going to get sick, but I'm afraid that they will murder me because they are all sick in this house. So, fortunately, these things cannot be transmitted via microphone or podcast, so I hope I cannot make listeners sick by talking to them any other way than through my poor logic and poorly thought through arguments. So I have a few things I want to go through, just kind of a little roundup. We're coming close to the third of the way through the baseball season. The quarter pole has passed. Quarter pole and third pole come on each other so quickly that it feels kind of weird to do both, so I just skip the quarter and go to the third. So we're not ready for the third, but I want to ask you, to me, you know, you are an expert in many fields, Ms. Footer. And I'm not going to ask you about Tim Tebow, so you're welcome.
I haven't been paying attention to him lately, so I wouldn't have anything to contribute on that side anyway.
That's right. I don't think there is actually much to contribute. So as try as you might. So I want to ask you about the Astros. This is the best team in baseball. They have taken off. You and Nizola have a long time history with your running around with the Astros. They are, as of right now, are 31-15. They are 16 games over 500. They have a 7-game lead. They have the best record in baseball. And what's funny is that, like, Carlos Beltran's not hitting that well, and Alex Bregman's not hitting that well. It feels like a team that right now it seems like they're winning because of their pitching. This is a team we thought their offense was going to be top to bottom. I look at this team and I think, wow, they're really good, but I kind of feel like they could still be better.
Yeah. I mean, it's true that there are some hitters that aren't hitting that well. There's really no one that's like, you know, hitting like 320. It's just not that kind of lineup. They're getting like all these home runs and all these like, you know, clutch hits with guys on base. So I wouldn't say that it's like, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to like go game by game, but I don't think it's like just so much that their pitching has been carrying them, because their offense has been carrying them, and they still have like major problems at the back end of the rotation, which, you know, could be fixed over time when these guys get a little bit more experience and get settled in a little bit. But yeah, it's just like one of those teams where like on an off night of, you know, bad pitching, then that's when they'll score a ton of runs. And you know, the other thing I have to say, and that's not taking anything away from the Astros, because they're doing exactly what they should be doing, which is like taking advantage of the fact that they play in a terrible division. You know, through the first 40 games of the season, at the end of that stretch, they're heading to Yankee Stadium. So at that point, they had played one team that at that point had a over 500 record, and that was the Cleveland Indians. So they played, you know, like crap for – they played crap teams for – almost the entire way up until that point. And, you know, the Indians have taken 5 of 6 of them this season. So they stumbled a little bit when they were swept at home by the Indians. So, you know, I mean, the other thing is, like, basically there's like a lot of really bad teams at baseball this year. I mean, I'm looking at a lot of the records. There's a lot of, like, you know, teams that were supposed to be great that are kind of pedestrian, sort of mediocre at this point. And then there's just some really bad teams. And so I just feel like when you match up the Astros, which is about everybody that they played, if there's, you know, flaws, or if there's not like a dominant, you know, potential in those teams, and the Astros can just kind of exploit that. So, yeah, it's just it's a really good team. I don't look at it as like a team that is maybe quite as good as its record, but it's totally like good enough to win the division, like by a landslide. And if they can get another pitcher at the deadline, then they will be set up to go deep into October. So, yeah, good times here in Houston.
Yeah, they seem pretty stacked, even with guys that are not tearing off. I mean, listen, George Springer is a really good player, but he's batting 235, you know, right. And Bregman's really not gotten going. And, you know, there's some guys are doing okay, and Beltran's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. But, you know, I feel like that's the kind of the nice thing about being in that division, is they can just kind of pace and just kind of chill out and figure it out and rest guys. And you know, and Keuchel's on the DL now, but you know, he's got off this great start. I don't think there's this sense that they think he's going to be out for a really long time. And you know, to me, the thing that this team needed was just at least just one other starter to step up and be great, and that's been McCullers. McCullers is 23. You know, there were people talking last year about how he should maybe just go to the bullpen. That it was never going to get it figured out. Here he's 23, and he has been one of the best starters in baseball. Do you think if they? Assuming Keuchel's okay, and he's probably okay.
Yeah, I think he's starting on Saturday, they said.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. Assuming he's fine, you know, if this is a team that already has a 7-game lead, and again, even Texas, as much as they've gone on this run, they look like a team that's not, they haven't quite figured it out yet. Like, even as much as they're winning, it's not because of their stars, and they're getting kind of weird wins here, and strange guys popping up in nowhere. It feels like neither one of these teams, those teams are really, like, operating on all cylinders, but certainly when Houston gets going, with already have a 7-game lead, that seems like the clear favorite. If you can just kind of hang on to that lead, even put a little bit of distance, all you really do is got to find that one other starter, which they certainly have the ability to do, and keep everybody healthy. All of a sudden, I agree that the rotation depth is an issue. I mean, Joe Musgrove and Charlie Morton and all these other fellas kind of hanging around. But once you get in the playoffs, who cares? And if you can get to that point, we get Keuchel, McCullers, and one other guy, that suddenly looks like as good a rotation as you'll see other than maybe Boston in the playoffs. With that offense, this is always the benefit of having it being in a division that's so lousy. It's not just that, hey, we get to win the division, this is great. It's that you can tweak. Like, we're in mid-May, we're already talking about, okay, how did the Astros tweak their postseason rotation? That's a pretty good sign.
Yeah, I mean, really, you just have to – you know, everyone was kind of like, I mean, from a fan standpoint, which is understandable, but everyone was like really sort of mad about the Indians sweeping them. And I'm like, okay, well, they're on pace to win like 115 games, which is not going to happen. They're going to win like 90 some games. So that means there's a lot of losses coming along. And if you can just go 500 against the good teams that you play over the course of the season and you beat up on your own division, then you're going to win 90 games regardless. And like, that's going to be plenty. Then you're going to win far more than 90 games. So, I mean, everyone, you know, kind of has it in their minds, like what happened in the postseason last year, what Francona did with his pitching staff when he was so bare bones. But you can't just like go by that playbook though and expect that that's, you know, going to work as well as it worked for the Indians. But all you really need is like three really strong starters, and then you can kind of piece things together. And as long as your bullpen is strong, like, you're fine. It's going to be a matter of like keeping up the intensity, keeping up this pace. What if they have this huge lead? I mean, we've seen it happen like in the past. Well, actually, the thing that stands out to me is the Cardinals, not to bring up they won the World Series that year. So it's not bringing up a bad memory. In 2006, you know, they had such a strong hold on that division. And then they almost lost it when they lost like 7 in a row. The Astros won 7 in a row. So you want to be, you know, you don't want to be limping into the playoffs. Or lose that intensity in September, but it's crazy like how well they've been doing so far. But I really haven't like looked at the schedule and thought, oh well, here's another like really, you know, where they're really going to be challenged. Here's another like what could be a bad stretch. That was supposed to be right now. They were going to play the Yankees, and then they were going to come home, and they were going to play the Indians, and then the Tigers and the Orioles. Well, the Tigers aren't even that good, and they're just abysmal defensively. Not impressed with them at all these last two games. So the Astros, I don't know. There are a few teams that are really going to give them like a run for their money.
Here's a question about just how people are in Houston. Are they amped about this team? Obviously, there's been some public relations snafus the last few years and some ugliness, but like, are people like really into it? Like, you've been in Houston with those 05, with those teams in the mid-aughts that just captured the imagination of the town. Are you seeing that?
I mean, I think so. I think that, you know, a lot has happened in between those years, that you're referring to and now. And, back in that, at that time, you know, just attendance, like a crowd of 27,000 would have been like a really bad crowd and kind of like setting off alarm bells with the Astros back then. And that would be on a Tuesday night. You know, the numbers are lower on midweek games, with school still in session, and that wasn't an issue, 12 years ago. So, there were things that happened. Not only did they have that stretch where they kind of lost a lot of fan interest just by being as bad as they were, and then being even worse, and, you know, as bad as they possibly could get it, but they also weren't on TV to the majority of Houston for two straight years, and the Rangers were on in Houston every game. And that is the one thing that I think gets lost in people's memories, that they don't don't remember that. So when you look at a map of Houston and they have the territories of, you know, what's Rangers territory, what's Astros, the entire state of Texas is Rangers territory, except for the little dot in Houston. And so they lost San Antonio and they lost Austin, and they have to work their way back to getting back. But yes, I mean, this has always been like a really good baseball town, and people laugh at me, but it's true. I mean, they love the Astros, and they are starting to show up and they're being more enthusiastic. But it's, you know, they're not all the way back from that standpoint. But they're getting pretty close.
All right. So the next thing I want to talk about, Rob Manfred, spoke yesterday about Mexico City. You know, I think they're going to put some more games in Mexico City. And he actually talked long term about he would love to actually even move a team to Mexico City. Amusingly, preparing for this podcast, I typed in Manfred and Mexico into Google, figuring it would bring up the MLB story. It did. It also brought up a Breitbart story about this. Can imagine. I will say I amused myself by reading the comments on the Breitbart story of Rob Manfred potentially moving a team, expanding to Mexico City. What I'm curious about this is a couple things. One, some people said maybe Mexico City itself is maybe a little bit too far away. It's actually not in the middle of the really heavy, excited baseball areas. Maybe Monterrey would be a better place to go. There's a question of how much, you know, players want to go sign as a free agent there, though. And along those lines, as the second question is, if you're going to expand, you have to expand somewhere else. You have to expand somewhere else as well. And does that bring in Montreal? Or do you move a team? I'm curious, just as a general thing, before we get into the Mexico idea, what do you think about expansion? Would you be okay with two more teams? Or do you think we're in an okay spot now?
I think we're in an okay spot right now. And there aren't any more American cities that you can put a team, regardless of all of the arguments that people come up with their particular cities that they love. 81 home games, 40,000 seats in a stadium. That is a different animal than anything else. Football, basketball. And so, I do feel like baseball is going to be back in Montreal eventually. And the Mexico City thing is problematic for many reasons, or complicated, I should just say. First of all, the travel, the distances that teams are going to have to travel, the elevation there. It is insanely elevated. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's, I remember the Astros had exhibition games in Mexico City in 2004. I did not know anything about Mexico City or elevation or nothing. And so we get to the stadium, and my friend from the PR department, the two of us start like just climbing through the stands to get up to the press box. And, you know, I'm young and I'm in good shape. I thought I was actually going to die when I got to the top. I did not know. There was no air coming into my lungs. I almost passed out. I was wheezing. I had no idea, you know, what the conditions were like there. So there's a lot of, you know, the ball just flies in ways that, you know, I think it'd be even more than what, you know, we saw at Coors Field in their first 15 years. So there's a lot to account for. And the fact that you have to be able to support the team, you have to have, you know, the people to come out and spend the money and fill up that stadium 81 times, like we said. So, you know, Rob was saying yesterday, and I thought it was cool, you know, he wants to play regular season games there. It's time to move some regular season games there, not exhibition games, but games that actually count. And so you never know, like, you know, with him, I mean, he's so into this and so pro international play that you never know what kind of tricks he has up his sleeve. But it's going to be very, very complicated. I think baseball is fine the way it is. I don't think that the talent pool needs to be watered down anymore, but we'll see.
I'd like to know, of those 2004 games, I did not know that story of you doing that. That cracks me up. Those two exhibition games, the scores were 11-1 and 21-6. those are the scores of those two games. So I think if they could get over some of the larger issues you talk about, I really think Monterrey makes a little bit more sense. I think Monterrey is closer. They actually have a stadium. I'm assuming anyone would have to build a new stadium, but Monterrey is closer to, I think, where the area of Mexico where baseball, I think, is most popular. And Mexico City has, you know, so many other entertainment options. You feel like you wonder about that with Monterrey. But yeah, more to the point, man, 21-6.
Yeah.
That would be fun. It would make Coors Field look silly. It would make Coors Field look like Petco Park.
And you really, I mean, you just can't, you can't sustain that. Yeah, it's just, I mean, are you going to get pitchers to want to pitch there? Like, who's going to want to go there? There's just a lot. There's, you know, to live in a foreign country, to know that you're going to be a terrible major league pitcher the entire time you're there. It's just very complicated. And so I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. And the fans are amazing. You know, they just love baseball so much. And it would be fantastic to be able to do that. I just don't know if logistically, I just don't know if it makes sense.
I think if he were to do it, it would be a matter of, he would see it worth it in the long term and willing to handle some short term bumps. And I think it would you just have to decide, we're putting a team in Mexico, even if we have a problem with it and people don't want to play there or the game feels weird there or, you know, I think the average income of the population in Mexico City is considerably lower than the American average. But again, if you're going to expand though, and you know, he's talking about expanding here. You know, I mean, there's been discussion in the past, like, Oakland's not moving now, but I mean, are the Rays going to move or some of these other teams? But if nobody's going to move and you want to get a team in Montreal or you want to get, there has to be two teams. You have to come up right with two places. And, you know, people have brought up Portland. They brought up Charlotte. They brought up Vancouver. I've always thought Charlotte makes a little bit more sense than Portland or Vancouver, but I still think, frankly, Charlotte is you're pushing it. Like, I don't know if it works. So but if you're gonna expand, I'll put it this way: if they're gonna expand to Montreal, and I think eventually they're going to expand to Montreal, I think that's coming, and I think they're gonna be called the Expos, and it will be really cool.
Yes,
and it will be a really neat thing. But they're gonna have to go somewhere else, and I think if Charlotte isn't ready and Portland isn't ready or aren't the right places, I can see him, because as you talked about, the globalization of sport is something that's incredibly important to him. I can see him just saying, come on, hell or high water, we'll give Mexico City a shot or Monterey a shot and see what happens. I can see it happening.
I mean, yeah, give him a shot and see what happens. I mean, that's like, it's you really can't go about it like that. I mean, you have to make the commitment and it has to work. It can't fail. Like, when you get to be that far into it, it can't fail.
I don't know. The Rays the Rays have failed. And I'm sure that's a problem. But, like, the reason the Rays have failed, or more to the point, the reason we haven't moved the Rays is because they have a terrible stadium deal. Like, I'm assuming now Manfred would not put any sort of situation together where a team had a bad stadium deal. Like,
build a stadium.
Yeah, so like they'll do what the Braves are doing. They'll build a stadium. If it doesn't work, they'll just find another one in 15 years. See ya, suckers. And that, I mean, I'm not saying that's right or like it's a good thing at all, but I think they can overcome a mistake. If it turns out it's a terrible idea to have a team in Mexico City or to have a terrible team in Monterey, you're not stuck with it the way that you're stuck with the Rays now. I'm assuming Manfred's a smart guy. He would make sure that there was some sort of out for them there. And I just think he's committed enough to want to try this that he'll give himself an out. And if it doesn't work, try this. But I think if they expand, if I had to predict, I would guess it would be Montreal and either Monterey or Mexico City.
That would be interesting. So you looked up those scores in 2004?
Yes.
You looked so I'm just, I my memory is fuzzy. The games ended abruptly. The last game ended abruptly. The last game, what was the score?
21-6. There's the one that was 13-1, one that was 21-6. I don't have their box scores in front of me. I just have the details.
It's interesting. I thought it was a tie. I thought that's why.
I can check that.
It's a tie game, but you know what? It might be that it was they ran out of pitchers and they stopped playing.
Yeah, it was 21-6. Maybe it was 21-6 in like the third inning or something. And they're like, okay, enough.
Yeah, because you don't take your entire team. I mean, it's just spring training. You're just leaving spring training and coming back. So you're only taking a handful of people. So they probably went through all the pitchers and then stopped playing. Because I just remember everyone was booing and we kind of had to like scurry ourselves out of town. It was people were not happy. So I thought it was just because it was a tie game, but it must have just been because they just were like, we don't have any more pitchers to supply and we're leaving. Thank you for your hospitality.
I have to say, if there's a possibility of a 21-6 game, I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see
it. It was an interesting. It was an interesting place. It was, you know, it was really funny because you know, their Wi-Fi was actually like better than in a lot of major league stadiums, which does not speak well of what the condition of the major league stadiums were in 2004 in terms of getting not Wi-Fi but dial-up.
Dial-up, right?
dial up and just getting being able to get online was not easy.
I want an oral history of those games in Mexico. I'm definitely curious about that. Sounds really fun. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about is we are reached the point of the year where we are far enough along that people are nervous about how their team's doing, but and thus prone to rash decisions. The Red Sox right now, manager John Farrell is under quite a bit of scrutiny right now. A lot of people think he's lost the team. There are some comments that came out of the locker room that seemed to be questioning him a little bit, which is always how these things start. Also, everyone in Boston is insane. So yeah. Anytime there's any sort of negativity, it becomes a feeding frenzy there. The thing that's weird about this, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. First off, do you think Farrell should be fired? Do you think Boston's performance right now, because you know this is a team that people that won the division last year and that people thought was going to be really good this year. So they brought in Chris Sale, who's been amazing. Craig Kimbrell's had this great year, and they're still only two games over 500. And the Yankees have taken off in this thing. Do you understand why people would want to make a move there?
Yeah, my question is, which player did they get to replace all the Big Poppy's offensive production from last year? Which player was that?
Yeah, there was no one. There was no one that did that.
Okay, all right, interesting. Yeah, that's John Farrell's fault. Yeah, that's how this thing starts. So you can't really do anything except fire the manager because everybody else is sort of in place. And so he will take the fall. I don't think he should be fired, but there's also a chance that they could have somebody new in there and then they were going to take off eventually anyway, because that's how the season goes. But yes, that is the standard thing when your team is underperforming, then it's fire the manager or fire the hitting coach or fire the pitching coach. It's a lot of people that don't really understand what they're talking about, which is who dominates the, whatever bandwidth. And so if the players are starting to grumble about him, then he's pretty much probably going to be a goner.
Yeah, and it's weird because, again, people in Boston are just, like, they're nuts. I mean, they're absolutely crazy. It's weird because, remember, 2 years ago, they wanted to fire Farrell, too, when they finished in last place. Right. Everyone was all mad about that, which I remind everyone was 2 years after John Farrell won a World Series with a team that was not expected to win the World Series at all. And actually, he'd done well with Toronto before he'd come to Boston. Right. And I wonder if this is one of those. Like, it's strange, like New York has – the Yankees have had two managers in 20-plus years. And to me, the Red Sox are becoming – like, they've become like those old Yankees teams with, like, kind of head on a swivel, whip around, make a quick decision, rash decision, angry because of insane media people, decision-making. Think about the last managers that have won a World Series to get fired. Charlie Manuel got fired, but I think that was something different. That was less because they didn't like him as a manager and more that he was a guy that wanted to win championships and they needed someone that was willing to manage a really bad team for a while. And Ozzie Guillen was fired because Ozzie Guillen drives everybody crazy. So there was that. But other than that, you really just have Bob Brindley, who was actually a pretty lousy manager, as the only people to get fired so quickly after they won a World Series. And this is my ongoing theory. This looks more and more right to me that whatever your thoughts about Farrell, he seems like a league average manager. He doesn't seem like particularly innovative, but he's not particularly terrible. But when you're Boston, you've gone through these wild fluctuations the last few years and you have all this chaos. And remember they ran out Terry Francona and Theo Epstein. Like, let's not forget that either.
Right.
These two Hall of Fame guys. I wonder if there's something specific in the media scene, in the fan base, that's making people in Boston just a little bit nuts with how they see their teams and what they expect out of their teams in a way that we used to look at the Yankees that way and maybe not so much anymore.
Well, I mean, the expectations were so high coming into the season, and I think that was all based on the fact that they got Chris Sale. So they're like, okay, all of our problems are solved. This is going to be, another one of those wonderful seasons, and it could still end up being that way. I mean, they're two games over 500, like they're fine, but in that division, it's not quite good enough. So there's always any kind of lag is going to be a fire Farrell opportunity for, the fan base. And I don't know. I mean, I really don't I really don't. They're 10-12 on the road. That's not good. They're 13-9 at home. I don't know. They're pretty steady. But if they're tired of Farrell not being like more exciting or, you know, more edgy or not Joe Maddon, whatever, then maybe they need to make a change. It doesn't really guarantee anything. I don't think they should do it now. I mean, I think they should wait closer to the All-Star break. But yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard to just be anything Red Sox in Boston because, you know, that's all they really care about up there.
You know who they'd love to have as a manager is Terry Francona. That would be a pretty nice guy for them to have as their manager if they hadn't ran him off in a peak of insanity.
I was covering the Indians at this exhibition series over spring training in San Antonio. And just after spending some time with Francona and just kind of seeing, you know, what he's done with the Indians. And I look back, I just did a little search to look back at what happened, you know, the articles from when he, on his exit out of Boston. It just made me sick. I mean, it just made me sick the way that they treated him, the way that the media treated him, the things that they said, the things that they revealed about his personal life. They just trampled all over him. And God love that man. I would put one of the fingers on my hand up in the air if Boston ever came courting me, if I was him.
Yeah, I mean, all he did was just win the Boston Red Sox two World Series.
They're
lunatics there. Like, in all honesty, I'm sorry, Boston listeners, you know, like, I'm sorry, but like, there's something that's like, I think there's been a patriotization of the whole city and their fan base and the look at all these teams. Because, I mean, you know, there is the point that the Yankees hit where their desperate desire to win at all costs, as quickly as all costs, became self-destructive. Yeah. And I can see Boston getting to that point now.
Yeah, well, yeah, they make it personal. I feel like they make it more personal than Yankees. And I'm probably, you know, thinking of that wrong because I'm sure that the Yankees have gotten in some really ugly things too. But
I mean, Steinbrenner did, but since Steinbrenner's gone, since George was gone, I think that hasn't really happened yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I just Farrell will. But again, if it comes back to the players and they are grumbling about him, and if they you know, quote unquote, quit on him, and then that seems to be why the underperforming might happen. That chicken and beer demise in 2011. I mean, the three guys, John Lester, John Lackey, and who was the other one? Beckett, I think, just totally were like, just completely disregarded Francona. And that just like ruined the entire season for everybody. If that starts happening, then Farrell's gone. He's gone.
The
veteran guys turn into, you know, gigantic jerks, we'll say.
I wouldn't want to manage that team. I don't care how much talent they are. I wouldn't want to worry. All right, Allison, we'll come back and do this again next week. Well, maybe we'll do a look at a third of the way through the season thing. We're coming up on starting to get serious business here. So, Allison, thank you as always. Thanks for chatting with me, and we'll chat next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Bill.
Everyone, always remind you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, give us a review, so on and so forth. Chat with you all next week.